Borderlands is back. Shoot and loot your way through a mayhem-fueled adventure in Borderlands 3. Blast through new worlds and enemies as one of the four new playable Vault Hunters, each with deep skill trees, abilities, and customization. Play solo or with your friends to take on insane enemies, score loads of loot, and save the galaxy from a fanatical threat. Mayhem is coming September 13th on PC, Xbox One, and PS4. Pre-order now to receive the Gold Weapon Skins Pack at Borderlands.com.
From Complex to Queens listeners, this is Ken Lavin. I'm joined here by Lucas Vlahos. Steve Sipa is currently, or Sipa, sorry, I just pulled a Jeff Paternostro, is currently sitting on the Columbia Fireflies in Columbia, South Carolina. So we're on our own this week.
With no laptop charger.
No laptop charger, yeah. We will give Steve some shit about that next week, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So Lucas, how are you today?
I'm all right. Happy Father's Day to everyone. It's pretty nice out. Not as nice as it was this week, but it's a nice day.
Yeah, pretty nice day. Not too hot, you know.
And the Mets managed to not, you know, they haven't lost yet today. Yet, the operative word of that sentence, so.
God, what a mess of a game yesterday was.
What a mess of a series. Like... Let's not.
Yeah, let's not. So it was a kind of a bad week for the Mets minor league affiliates, pretty much across the board. The Syracuse Mets were the most successful team in the organization, going 3-3 on the week. They're now 33-35 on the year and have fallen to third place in the International League North Division. It was an extremely bad week for the Binghamton Rumble Ponies.
Oh, yeah.
We'll start by saying Andres Jimenez had his hand examined. Turns out they couldn't determine that anything was broken. So that's good news, but Binghamton nonetheless was playing without him and went 1-5 on the week. They're now down to 33-29 on the year, which is good for fourth in the Eastern League Eastern Division. The St. Lucie Mets went 2-3 this week. They're now 32-34, which is good for fifth in the Florida State League South Division. And Columbia continued to not be very good, going 1-5, which brings them to 24-41, which has them at last in the South Atlantic League Southern Division.
God, that yes. team is such a letdown.
So bad.
Hey, Brooklyn still has a perfect record, so, yeah, so we got Brooklyn, that going for us.
In the annual, I like to call it the pettiest series in baseball, between the Brooklyn Cyclones and the Staten Island Yankees, Brooklyn is currently 2-0, so that's nice.
I would bet almost all of the money I have, which isn't much, but I'd bet almost all of it that the Wilpons are refreshing the box score as that game is happening, and the Steinbrenners are like, what game?
Yeah, no, the Steinbrenners absolutely, it's petty because the Wilpons do things like, I've seen Noah Syndergaard pitch one of those games on a rehab stint. I'm pretty sure they sent Justin Wilson.
Yeah, there. Justin Wilson was pitching there yesterday. It's like, what?
Solely. Yeah.
Now, well, I can understand it if, like, he's about to be activated tomorrow and they want to.
Yeah, but also the team is going on the road after today.
Yeah, I mean, it also might have made sense when, you know, AAA was in Vegas still, but now AAA's in Syracuse. We have at AAA. we're 2 minutes into the show and we're already yelling about stupid Mets things.
Yeah, I mean, as far as stupid Mets things goes, that's a pretty harmless one.
Yeah,
he's gonna pitch somewhere. Who gives a shit if it's Brooklyn?
Right.
It's
right.
Just funny because like it's clear the Yankees like don't actually care.
Right.
About the short season series against the
Crosstown. The Yanks are busy, actually spending on their major league team.
Yeah, they're busy trading for Edwin Encarnacion. So that
because
to bolster so their lineup.
So they can so have they can someone have, with a 110 weighted runs created plus or higher at basically every position,
That they can have one of the league leaders in the American League leaders in home runs in their lineup.
In the next week, they're probably adding Stanton, Judge, and Encarnacion.
Yeah, that's wild. Like,
that's what the Yankees care about. yeah, so that's the records and the long diatribe about the pettiness of the New York Mets.
Shall we move on to players of the week?
Yeah. Why don't you go first? Because your guy's an action prospect and mine isn't.
So the hitter of the week, we decided to go with somebody who, is probably going to be a podcast concern for most of the year and is probably more interesting to talk about than Carlos Cortez. Ronnie Mauricio, who hit 318. 348, 636 on the week before going 3-for-4 yesterday with a triple and a double. His total line for the season is up to 295, 339, 401. So that slugging percentage is above 400. Hallelujah. And that all of that is with him being one of the maybe 5 or 10 youngest players in the South Atlantic League.
Yeah, absolutely.
He got a glowing review. Yeah, 18. And he got a glowing review from our very own Steve Sippa. I'll pull up his Twitter report right now, Lucas, if you.
Yeah, so I mean, I was probably the low man on Mauricio because I'm very much not a scout. I'm someone who looks at stats and tries to go off that. He hasn't really answered a lot of my concerns yet because he's still not walking a ton. He's still not hitting for a ton of power. But, I mean, the dude's 18, he's probably weighs 160 pounds soaking wet.
Yep.
And the basketball seems there. Go ahead with what Steve wrote, because that's for a prospect like this, the in-person look from an actual scout is a lot
more important. So there isn't really much on Twitter. It's basically, he just said, Ronnie Mauricio is something special, folks.
That's good.
And, should I pull out the DMs?
Yeah, I mean, we could pull the. I mean, he dropped us.
He gave us a little thing.
Fast, whippy, quick. Yep. Showed solid gap power with a little bit of home run power right now. Very thin and leggy. Will add more when he fills out. Speedy and looks good visually at short. So
that's about as glowing a review as you're going to get from a, young Dominican,
Right. Prospect. He's not Wander Franco, but he's doing a lot of good things.
Yeah, I think there's a pretty good chance he's one of the better players to sign in the 2017 IFA period. I always say with the 2015 period that got us Jimenez, if you have a class that's that loaded, you're bound to hit on somebody.
Right.
It's nice that it's looking like Mauricio might be somebody that they hit on. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still a little worried he eventually winds up more Ahmed Rosario than one of the other.
Oh, yeah, that's valid.
Right, like Rosario, who doesn't walk a lot, doesn't hit for a ton of power, though his power has improved this season. I think Rosario's defense will improve over time, so I'm not concerned about that.
I've also been pretty vocal in that I think he the athletic tools are so loud that if you need to move him to center, I think he would adjust there pretty well.
Right.
You'd have to do it during the off season, of course, or during spring. But you can't just throw him to the wolves out there. But I think he has all of the tools you would need to be a very good center fielder.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which is also something that we've all been saying about. He has all the tools you would need to be a very good shortstop.
Yeah. I mean, he does, and I find it puzzling that they haven't been able to work on his defense more. But Rosario is still also just 23, so there's time.
Yeah, and like the things about shortstop is a much more we'll say refined skills than I think center field would be. Like routes and stuff would have to be, taut and everything, but
I think
it's not like he's turning double plays. It's not like a lot of the hands issues, which I think is really his big issue, is he boots balls from time to time, which you would hope would go away with age, but you know, if it doesn't, that's less of an issue in the ball.
How about we just lock him in a room with Luis Guillorme for a couple months, and that should fix the issue, right?
Just bounce a tennis ball against the wall for a few years.
Right. And I think Rosario is a useful player. I think that's kind of where Mauricio's tracking now, but he still has the upside to grow into more power. So
yeah,
it's exciting. More exciting than the rest of that roster.
Oh, exactly. And I think the thing that I'm most encouraged about with Mauricio is there's clearly room for him to add good muscle in a way that like Rosario was always kind of like stick thin. Mauricio has been showing a little bit more power, and I can see it really popping, you know.
Yeah,
he gets a little bigger and he starts to fill out more. Although that's projection, and as we always say, projection is, you know, in the eye of the beholder. So
yeah, some guys just never fill out, and the Mets don't have the greatest track record when it comes to helping guys get to more power. Alonso is more the exception than the rule, I think.
Yeah, the power was pretty much there. They just kind of
tweaked the swing a little bit.
Figured out how to make the swing work so that he could get to it, you know?
Right. The Mets don't do a great job with swing changes, and I don't know that a Mauricio needs one or not, but this is an issue for a couple
of
years down the line.
Honestly, I've seen a lot of the swing, and I really like the swing. I don't think he's going to have to change a thing. I think it's maybe the approach that's going to have to, you know, be tweaked, you know, what he's trying to do with the ball and pitch selection.
Okay.
But again, he's 18, so.
Right, there's time. I mean, like, if I recall correctly, Rosario had a very noisy swing coming up where he would
he still does.
Right. Well, it used to be like exaggeratedly bad.
I remember reading a report from Jeff that was like, there's a lot of noise.
Yeah, it's like doing all this weird shit with his hands.
Yeah. There was a big leg kick. Basically, everything you would do to try to max out somebody's power who doesn't have a ton of it, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
That's the positive on Mauricio, and hopefully he hits the high end of that.
Yep. I think I said a couple weeks ago I was at a 7 in terms of excited for Mauricio. I'm probably still about there.
Yeah. I'm
looks like what you want from your, you know, big IFA signing from 2 years ago.
Yep. Yeah, I'm pretty much neutral on him, but he's already high on it in the first place.
Yep.
I guess pitcher of the week now. Someone we've talked about before, but it's not Anthony Kay this week. Anthony just got promoted to AAA.
Good job,
this week it's actually Chris Mazza, who I believe was one of our first pitchers of the week.
Yeah,
earlier
I'm looking
at that
now.
Early on.
I'm not seeing it. Wow.
Hmm.
Yeah, no, it doesn't look like he's won one yet.
Really? I could have sworn we talked about him at some point.
We probably have. Flexen, Gonzalez, K, Wilson, Gonzalez, K are the pitchers.
So. Okay, so we haven't had Mazza yet. So Mazza is a first-time winner then. 29-year-old right-hander. I was reading, apparently he's a not-so-distant relative of Joe DiMaggio, which was kind of cool. So obviously as a 29-year-old, not like a super significant prospect or anything. He was picked in the 2011 draft in the 27th round with the 27th pick by the Twins. Never really got out of A-ball for Minnesota, just kind of bounced around. He had an arm injury that kept him out for a whole season. Later he actually pitched with a broken wrist for half a season. I think we've definitely talked about this.
We've talked about that.
So dude pitched with a broken bone, one of the handmates was broken. Inconceivable that he was able to pitch with that sort of pain. Like,
still
it's just
wild to me.
Astounding. But never had a ton of success with the Twins. Moved to the Marlins between where's the first year here? 2015 to 2018, and kind of bounced around in the mid minors. He made it up to AAA once, I think. So obviously some advancement. Joined the Mets before the season. He's been splitting time between AAA and AA. For Syracuse, he has a 3.86 ERA with a 7.2 K9 and a 2.3 BB9. Jeff actually saw him a couple weeks ago, or maybe this last week. Basically, it's exactly what you expect from this kind of pitcher. It's a fringy fastball with fringy commands, relievers mechanics, a firm changeup, a slider that's a little slurvy. If he keeps it in the 80s, it's apparently effective, as opposed to if it slips into the 70s. So basically, just copy-paste the report from every journeyman starting pitcher in AAA. But this yesterday, he went 8 scoreless innings, allowed only 2 hits, struck out 8, got the win, added a double and a run at the plate just for good measure. And hey, now he might be next in line to make starts for the Mets with Syndergaard going down. So get your Chris Mazza Met jersey ready to go.
So we've congratulated Chris Mazza on his accomplishment enough. Do you want to start talking about who would be in line for that rotation spot for a minute?
Oh, boy. Yeah, so
Mazza's probably in the conversation. Probably Walker Lockett would be.
Please, no.
Walter Lockett.
Yeah, Walter Lockett was the arm they picked up for Kevin Pilecki from the Indians this past offseason, along with Sam Haggerty. Neither of them has been good, shockingly.
He is currently striking out 3.28 per 9.
Oh, Jesus.
That is
really bad. I mean,
his numbers are decent, yeah. But yeah, that's really low.
That's insanely low. And his FIP is in the 5s, I'm pretty sure. That's...
Yep. He is a guy that the Mets really thought they picked a diamond in the rough this offseason, and I don't get it.
I never got it either. And I was never a huge fan of Kevin Pilecki by any stretch of the imagination, but they traded him away for an 8th starter and a utility infielder.
Yeah, who's old in the Eastern League.
It made no sense. So that's one option. And I'm pretty sure we all know who am I thinking of that Logan Verrett. I vaguely get like a Logan Verrett vibe from Walter Lockett, except he might be even worse. So
yeah, Verrett was like a one pitch guy. He had like a pretty good slider, and you know everything else had to play off that. Walker Lockett, I don't know.
He might have no.
Pitch. He might be a half pitch guy.
Right. Right.
Oh, that's rude.
So that's one option. I think Wilmer Font is still on this team, probably.
He's probably going to be the...
I honestly... So apparently, earlier today, Brody said that Kay will not be the guy to take that spot, but he may come up in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I honestly would not be opposed to fast-tracking Kay at this point.
Yeah, I think it might be a little soon right now, just because he's got the one start in AAA, mm-hmm. and it's not like it went particularly well.
Yeah, it's
like
one start.
Didn't go that bad, you know.
Right. He had a lot of strikeouts. Looks like there was probably some BABIP misfortune or something.
Yeah, I think he gave it wrong. So I would probably want to get him a couple more starts at AAA, just because you know we downplay the jump from AA to AAA, but like he is mm-hmm. facing. You know, guys with big league service time for probably the first time.
I think I was on the other side of that argument when we had that discussion, and I also think the Mets are kind of in a spot in the season where they need to establish whether they're going to be buying or selling, right? You don't want to get caught in the middle.
Yeah.
And I think if there's a time you kind of push your chips in a little bit, at least your internal chips, now would be it. And if
That's
that
fair.
Means Kay gets a couple starts at the major league level before he's quote unquote ready, mm-hmm. I don't think that's the biggest deal in the world, because you say, all right, this didn't work. Now the team's bad.
So yeah.
Like, start selling, send him back down to get some more seasoning.
And like, I always feel like you can always have the conversation with them when you do it. Like, hey, you know, try your best. We recognize this is a big ask, but you know, don't let this, you know, beat your confidence or anything.
Right.
You know?
These guys are professional athletes.
They want to compete. And I'm just going to go with Anthony Kay does not seem to be lacking in confidence.
No.
I think if you're going to push somebody a little faster than maybe a lot of people would think is necessary or would think is good, Anthony Kay might be a good candidate for that, because I don't think a bad outing or two to start his big league career is really going to kill him, I think.
No, I don't
think. If there's somebody who believes in himself, I think it's Anthony Kay.
Of all the pitchers we've talked about, he also probably has the single best pitch of all of them. Like, I don't know that any of the other arms you mentioned has a better pitch than Kay's curveball right now.
Yep.
And that alone makes me want to put him.
I think he could turn over a lineup once just going fastball and curveball. Like, at least once, just throwing the curveball 40% of the time. I think he could do that pretty easily.
I think the Mets could also leverage, not that any of these arms are the Rays get away with what they do because they, one, have a lot of quality arms and use them smartly, but I think the Mets could leverage this like, pile of misfit toys a little bit, and you could throw Robert Gsellman in here, too, and cobble together a couple, like, piggybacked starter system to fill
sort
out
of
the
like
back there.
Like a longer version of the opener, where
absolutely.
The first guy goes like three innings instead of one. Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. Like, you've got a couple of guys who really shouldn't. I don't want to put Kay in this category because hopefully at some point he'll be like a legitimate starter. But you've got a bunch of guys who you're pretty confident can turn over a lineup once, or you know, at least get you a few outs without imploding. It seems like a pretty good idea to just go say, hey, maybe this is Kay Gsellman Lugo's day, you know?
Right. I mean, we've always – this has always been kind of a pejorative when you're talking about a starter whose stuff doesn't play up in the bullpen, which to me has always described a starter that can maybe get through a lineup once but wouldn't benefit from only going one inning, from airing it out from one inning, and also doesn't have the stuff to get through it twice. And it seems like the rest of baseball has figured out a way to use these guys while the Mets are not being as forward-thinking as they could be with the assets they have.
Right.
And the assets they need to use now if Noah Syndergaard's on the shelf for a while.
Yeah, if he's going to miss, you know, time, they're going to need to find a guy who can – or a collection of guys who can give them, you know, maybe 5-6 starts.
Jason Vargas, fourth starter. Guys, our depth is great. What are you talking about?
Pitching depth.
That Dallas Keuchel guy, we didn't need him. Who's he going to replace in the rotation? Everyone's pitching well right now. God damn it. Meanwhile, the Braves, who like actually legitimately have pitching depth because they have a pile of young top prospects.
Yeah, a pile of young arms who aren't proven but have potential.
Don't worry, guys. We beat Staten Island twice.
Yep. Brooklyn must win.
So those are your players of the week. And
congratulations to Ronnie Mauricio and Chris Mazza. Anthony Kay, we'll get you another week.
Yeah, he has two more this season before we declare him ineligible.
Yeah, so.
A little bit longer.
Yep. My bad on that, Anthony. So I guess we'll discuss Brooklyn for a bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do we need to throw it a commercial?
Yeah, your call on when to do that exactly.
Sure. We'll hear from some of our sponsors, I guess, and we'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Avery Truffleman, and I'm hosting Curb's new podcast, Nice Try. It's stories about how people have tried to design a better world and what happens when those designs don't go according to plan. Season one is called Utopian, and it's about the perpetual search for the perfect place. It includes cannibalism, fascist architecture, polyamory, hermetically sealed domes, and Kourtney Kardashian's dining room chairs. But, you know, not necessarily in that order. New episodes of Nice Try come out every Thursday. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back to From Complex to Queens. I'm Ken Lavin. I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos, and we're going to do a little preview of the recently started Brooklyn Cyclones roster.
We've already spent too long talking about this pod.
Yeah,
but not the actual roster.
When Steve isn't here, we're kind of just kind of figuring things out.
Yeah, it's a meandering walk through the Mets prospect land.
Yep.
Brooklyn's already 2-0 with a roster full of older players.
Yeah, a lot of not just college players, but senior signed college players. So, do any of these guys look particularly interesting to you, Lucas?
The one who I found most interesting at the time of the draft, which hasn't changed because it's two games in a league they're too young for. I found Oda interesting.
He's probably going to be in Kingsport.
Right. So he's one of the few guys we haven't gotten to see yet. On the Brooklyn roster, no one in particular excites me. Mangum isn't there yet, so right. He was probably the most potentially interesting. I don't know if you disagree on any of that.
No, I mean, exciting might be the wrong word because, you know, they are senior signs. There's and in everyone's case except for Mangum, there's like a reason they ended up not being drafted until, you know, the price tag was drastically lower. I think this team is going to pitch, and I'm going to pitch relatively well, and I'll discuss that in a minute, I guess, because I want to make a few points on some of the offensive players first. Zach Reams, I've always been kind of fascinated by. I'm pretty sure he's never going to reduce the swing and miss enough to be, you know, much more than org filler, but I saw him a little bit at Texas Tech last year when I was trying to get a few game look at Josh Jung, and dude can hit the ball very far. I know Steve kind of liked him when he saw him, kind of the same deal where who knows if he'll hit enough, but, you know, the raw power is certainly there.
Right.
But I'm also kind of fascinated by Joe Guinard.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned him around draft time. What's your fascination with this dude?
So, like, with right first baseman, right, you try to take one or two in each draft, and then maybe one every 10 years becomes Pete Alonso, or Pete Alonso, like 75% of Pete Alonso, you know?
You get a Paul Goldschmidt occasionally.
Yeah, or just like a 3-2 outcomes guy who hits for enough power where you're not upset he's on your team, you know?
Luke Voit would be, I guess, the...
You mean Pakoda God, Luke Voit?
Luke Voit, Pakoda Overlord. Luke Voit.
Yeah, so like occasionally you get one of these guys who, you know, it's a right first baseman. In Gnord's case, I'm probably butchering that pronunciation, but there's plenty of reasons why he was available as a senior. You know, he can't really field at all at first base. But I like guys who just have ridiculous raw power, and he's somebody who seems like he has ridiculous. If you're going to bet on something, on a guy who doesn't have much upside, raw power and hoping he can find a way to tap into that consistently, I think is a pretty good way to go if you're investing little to nothing in someone. That's at least one tool that's pretty well developed and you can project, you know?
Right. Right.
Like, he's not going to lose, you know, light tower batting practice power in the jump from, I forget what conference University of South Florida is.
I could not tell you.
I couldn't tell you either. But he's not going to lose that raw power is something that's, you know, not in the beholder, really. Eye of the beholder. That being said, who knows if you'll hit?
Right. So I think you could make this a more generalizable philosophy question or draft philosophy question. Is it better to grab guys who maybe have an elite skill and then obvious holes, or to grab guys whose tools across the board are underwhelming but there's no big hole? And I've always leaned into the former camp, where I want someone who has an elite skill or two, but obvious right. holes that you have to try to fix, rather than someone who's like, all right, you're never going to be elite at any one thing, which just caps ceiling, I think, pretty hard.
Yeah, right. If you're, you know, drafting somebody for, I think Gennard got like $10,000 as a senior
yeah,
sign.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Like, why not swing for the fences, you know? Mm-hmm. You can, you know, it, say he figures out how to hit 230 in the big leagues.
Right,
you know?
Right.
That's a better outcome than, you know, a 230 hitter with some walks and a lot of power. It's a better outcome than somebody who gets to double A and, you know, never figures out how to hit spin, which
how
can
long
also
has,
be.
Right. I mean, how long has Mark Reynolds been hanging around? Like, that's him, basically.
Yeah, no, he's been around forever, but, you know, he's never going to pop into something unless something really weird happens.
Right, exactly.
I'd rather a guy who you can squint and see some upside, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree.
And all these senior signs, a lot of them do have that kind of one tool that's, mm-hmm. you know, like Ashford, I think, could run a lot and is a very good defensive outfielder.
Yeah, they drafted a couple of those speedy center field types.
Mangum's the same way, where he's mm-hmm. a very good defensive outfielder, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of questions. So there's guys, I'd rather get the one big league tool when you're, you know, sort of dumpster diving with mm-hmm. bonus guys, than trying to find average across the board, because if there's no room for any of that to fall, you know?
Right, right.
So
I think we're in agreement on that. And I guess I can see the appeal if this is just a guy who's going to hit huge bombs.
Yeah, that being said, I also like the swing a little bit mm-hmm. from what I've seen. It's got some noise, but for the most part, he's kind of direct to the ball.
Right.
So like a little bit of noise in the hands, but and he's got a little bit of an uppercut. But it's a little better than I thought it was going to be when you say, you know, day three senior sign.
Right, right, of course.
Now, the knock on Gennard is that he was teammates with Shane McClanahan, so it's not like scouts got any shortage of looks, as I mm-hmm. think Jeff pointed out.
Mm-hmm. And
he still went undrafted the right. year that McClanahan went in the first round, so that's obviously not the best sign. But, you know, for a senior sign, I don't dislike it, and I think there's something interesting. I like right first baseman, especially when you're not sinking significant resources into them, you know?
Okay. I mean, that last caveat is the most important part.
Yeah, no. If you're going for cheap, why not go for somebody who's got an intriguing tool, like we said, and, you know, whatever. The profile is what it is.
Right. Absolutely.
So.
What about the pitching for that roster? I mean,
none of it is like really high end, but no. I know Steve kind of likes Garrison Bryant, who should okay. be in the rotation. Matt Cleveland got a relatively significant bonus, and they're opening, you know, I think it was 300K or so for yep. Cleveland. And Deyson Acosta, you know, Steve loves his curveball.
Right.
I
remember him talking
yet,
about that
but,
last year, yeah.
Deyson Acosta is probably a legitimate prospect going mm-hmm. forward. So I think those three would be decent. And then they supplemented them with my other, you know, sort of fascination from the senior sign group, when Jordan Martinson, who was the guy we talked about last week, who did a lot of analytics work when he was at Dallas Baptist. So mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see what he looks like when he shows up. It's currently on the inactive list. But, yeah, there's a lot of guys who are probably too old for this level, so I think they'll pitch.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably the most interesting pitcher to me, and that's because I haven't seen Acosta in his curveball.
Yeah.
But Masterson, just because of the analytics angle is interesting.
Yeah, like I think I'm happy that they brought somebody like that into the organization. If mm-hmm. for no other, who knows if he's actually any good or not? But mm-hmm. you know,
get some of the other pitchers around him on board with that stuff.
Yeah, you can use them as sort of like a conduit to like
yep.
teach
yep.
some other guys some skills they otherwise wouldn't have.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, this is a roster that should win games, I think.
Yeah, which I wouldn't be surprised if that was part of the selling point for drafting.
Oh, it's always – I mean, they were bad
years.
Last year. They've been bad the last couple of years.
They were
right?
okay last year. They missed out on the playoff. Yeah, they were bad from – they were good in 2014 because they had Conforto.
I remember that.
And then 2015, they were bad. 2016, they were bad. 2017, they were bad. And then last year, they were 500 and missed on the wild card by on the last day of the season.
Right, right. So. I forgot that they left Conforto there for so long.
Yeah, it's just his draft year. You'd like to other teams use the draft year as like a, let's just see if we can get him to full season ball, get him into like a full season rhythm. But the Mets have never really been into that.
No.
They kind of just dump guys in Brooklyn because, of course, Brooklyn must win.
I mean, that's a good segue to talking about Brett Beatty, isn't it?
Yeah. So, there was some scuttlebutt on Twitter that Beatty was going to be assigned to Brooklyn after getting his feet wet in the complex, but it seems like they've kind of quashed that, and he's likely slated for Kingsport. Mm-hmm. Lucas, do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm not as opposed to that assignment as I might be for – like, sending Conforto to Brooklyn was annoying. I don't really care where they send a high schooler. In their draft year.
So I would like to see him in Brooklyn, partially for my own selfish reasons.
Of course.
Half an hour from that stadium.
Right.
Or maybe 45 minutes, I don't know. Also, I'd like to see them push him there because he's, not particularly young for the Appy League, just being one of the older high school seniors you're ever going to see. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He would be young for Brooklyn, but he's, I don't know what the exact average age in the Appy is, but it's got to be close to 20, right?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I could see them giving him the Kalanick program, basically. Yeah,
the conference for a little bit, and then the Appy, and then maybe if he hits better than Kalanick did during his time in Kingsport, mm-hmm. which, obviously, it was Kalanick's draft year.
Yeah. I mean, I think the transition is a lot bigger for the high schoolers than the college players for obvious reasons. So
you're on first real grind,
right? And I'm not.
As college players have a long season before that.
Yeah, and I have no problem with the Mets, and maybe they have concerns about throwing them into New York City too, which I don't think are totally invalid. Let's take you away from home and drop you into the biggest city in the world. And
like Coney Island is not necessarily. I would call it Big Apple adjacent.
Of course, right, but it's a 20-minute
But
train,
also,
right?
Yeah, you're very close to a lot.
Mm-hmm. I don't really have too strong opinions about what they do with Beatty. I'll be more interested to see what they do with him at the start of next season.
Yeah.
I just hope wherever they put him, he just hits some big bombs. Apparently, he was hitting some impressive bombs in batting practice at Citi Field yesterday. So
yeah,
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, they were saying he was hitting him into the second deck.
Oh, good. Yeah,
that's
the
nice.
Raw power is real.
We do love our raw power, don't we?
Yes, he's a little bit more than a right first baseman who can only hit dongs.
He is a left right.
Yeah, left right third baseman.
Third baseman for now.
Yeah. In terms of the other significant draft prospects, they just signed Wolf, their second round pick.
Yeah,
where do you think they're going to send him?
I think him and, God willing, if they sign Allen, are probably going to be on the same schedule that SWR was on last year, where pitches in the complex, they kind of limit his innings, and then if Kingsport, is still in it towards the end of the season, they'll just probably send everybody.
Yeah, just give him a couple playoff stretch starts.
Allen, maybe they push a little harder just because he's a more elite prospect.
Yep.
And I could imagine, if he shows up and just is blowing people away, they might move him. But
I think you could very easily have a situation a la Kay in Binghamton this year where he just has a two-pitch mix or a breaking ball or something that no one at the level can hit.
Yeah, and you'd like to challenge him, but also he's getting used to a pro schedule for the first time and,
Right. And how many innings do you really want to push him?
They're going to want to keep a very close eye and, very tight limit on his innings mm-hmm. before next year. So
Yeah. I think with high school guys, it's always the post-draft year that's most interesting to – the post-draft year placement that's most indicative. So we'll see what they do. I mean, hopefully they all put up some fun stats. We can dream all offseason, and then they get some aggressive assignments in 2020.
So, Lucas, are you worried at all that they're not going to sign Allen?
No. All right. Well, let me rephrase that. I am always concerned that the Mets will disappoint me. I would even go as far to say as I expect them to disappoint me.
Yeah.
That said, I don't think that we've seen any news or rumors that would indicate that they're not going to pull this off. So.
Yeah, if I had to put my level of concern on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say maybe a 3, just because I spent probably maybe an hour and 10 minutes on the plane from Colorado last week trying to figure out how the money was going to work. And it seemed pretty easy if Batty and Allen were both going to get $3 million.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure how the math works with Allen getting 3.9 and Wolf getting above slot in the second round.
Yeah.
But that being said, like, you don't do this unless you're pretty positive you can, you know.
Right. And there also is, before anyone panics, there's a very obvious reason they haven't finished their signings yet. They can't sign Mangum while
he's
still in the World Series, the College World Series, and they need to sign him before. They need to, like, have that extra money on the books.
I think it's something like...
Like, he's probably going to get
400,000. Yeah, no, it's something like 400,000 that would be added to their bonus.
Right, they want to lock up that money before they sign Allen. So the delay is not because they...
No, of course, yeah. But I'm not terribly concerned, but I just don't really get how the math is going to work, and I'm interested to see how the math is going to work. So that's where any trepidation is coming from on my part, is that I tried to crunch the numbers and couldn't figure it out. I assume the Mets are better with math than I am.
Yeah, and I also assume that Allen's number... We kind of heard that Allen's number came down a lot day two when he realized that no one was going to pick him at his current number. So maybe
if it's $3 million, if it's $3 million flat, I don't think there's any real issue because they'll have 1.8 or so from all the senior signs after Mangan signs and 600K from his slot bonus, and then they saved about 400 or something, so that gets you to around $3 million.
It's definitely I'm not too concerned from a realistic standpoint.
So
that's a Brooklyn's roster.
We'll probably talk about Kingsport next week after they start. Shall we go into everyone's?
Yeah, we can close out with our that guy, right?
Yep.
So this week, I was actually poking around. What was I poking around? I was poking around old Ruben Tejada scouting reports because apparently he's destroying the ball in AAA right now. And I came across a farm report where he had a big day, but I'm probably butchering this pronunciation. Is it Udy or Ayudi? I'm not even sure.
I've heard – yeah, Udy, I think.
Now I'm going to go with Udy. Udy Pena. Who is was an outfielder for the Mets. He was a IFA signing from the Dominican Republic in 2008 to 2009. Always a guy with a lot of tools. He was fast. He could throw the ball really hard. Prototypical right fielder's build with some extra speed. The power was there too. Just never quite figured out how to hit very well. Always struck out a decent amount, or always had a decent amount of swing and miss. And never made it past AA for the Mets. So he topped out in AA for the Mets in 2015. He went to the Marlins for the rest of that season after they released him. He spent some time with the White Sox in 2016, but he hasn't played in an affiliated organization since then. However, in the week of the 9th of June to the 17th of June in 2015, he hit 292, 292, 542, which is a 139 weighted with two home runs, one of which was apparently a real moonshot. This was at the time for the Binghamton Mets, still the Mets, not the Rumble Ponies at that point. And this was only a couple weeks before he was eventually released and moved on. So another international free agent by the wayside.
Yep. Wherever you are, Udy.
Udy,
hope you're doing well.
Yeah, I wonder if he's, like, bouncing around the Mexican leagues or something like that, but...
Opens BB Ref. Pena. Let's see if he's in independent ball. Nope.
Nope.
Looks like, yeah. Well, wherever you are, UD, thank you. And
thank you, and good luck with whatever it is you're working on. I mean,
yeah,
made it to double A. That's a lot more than some people can say.
Yep. Still one of the top 1% of baseball players on the planet.
100%, yeah.
All right.
We made through it. We made it through.
So is Steve. Yeah. Steve, come back.
Please come back, Steve.
We miss you.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he'll have lots of juicy reports from Columbia when he's back next week. We'll get into the Kingsport roster a little bit. Maybe Allen will be signed by then, and we can stop worrying. Yep. So.
I will never stop worrying, Lucas.
I mean, it's the Mets. You can never stop worrying. 100% true.
All right. So this has been From Complex to Queens. I'm Ken Lavin. You can find me on Twitter at KenLavin91. Joined by Lucas Vlahos, who is at LVlahos343, right?
Yep.
I should have that in front of me. I don't. We will be joined next week by our fearless leader, Steve Sipa, who is at Steve Sipa on Twitter. And you can email the show at FromComplexToQueens@gmail.com, right?
Yes, I think so.
If it's not, I will include the correct email in the show post. And yeah, subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. And please rate and review the show, but only if it's positive.
Yeah.
So thanks, guys, and we'll talk to you next week.